they could dump rock along this bank, it would help mitigate some of this being eroded right now.
The people of Akiak struggle with the disappearing riverbank. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state officials welcome efforts toward a natural gas line.
Costs and pricing are very, very important, but there are other comparative advantages that Alaska brings to the global LNG world.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Due to extreme erosion, the city and native community of Akiak have declared a state of disaster. Officials say the shoreline of the Kuskokwim River has eroded nearly 200 feet in just 1 month's time. Mark Earhart from member station KYUK in Bethel visited the village and reports that the people of Akiak are losing land and memories at an alarming rate.
The shoreline of Akiak is jagged. Clumps of earth the size of pickup trucks are sinking into the river. Treetops not yet relieved of their leaves can be seen creeping up from the water. Here, erosion has come quickly and steadily, taking foot after foot of the village with it.
Can't even go up there anymore. Wow, this is something else. We've never seen it like this before. I don't know.
Olga Charles stands on the shore as rain pours down over her face. There's a huge semicircle of freshly eroded earth in front of her. She's looking off into the trees where a dirt road full of memories once stood.
This is sad. And we can't even go up to my house anymore.
The house Charles grew up in is gone, moved piece by piece because of the erosion threat. Now the ground on which it once stood is gone too, with it about 40 feet of earth in just hours.
Because when I came down this morning, it wasn't like this. I don't know.
Erosion has been a constant threat for decades here in Akiak, a village of just over 300, about 30 river miles above Bethel. But it's never happened this quickly or this violently before. Falls usually low water has been replaced with screaming wind and high, furious tides. Mike Williams Sr. says this is some of the highest water he's ever seen in the village he's called home for 60 years.
I think the wind is going to pick up a little bit, and it's picking up since this morning, and I need to move my boats from my dog yard.
Williams, an Iditarod veteran, has over 40 dogs just yards from the shore. He's also the secretary treasurer of Akiak Native Community, which in conjunction with the city of Akiak has declared a state of disaster. Over the weekend, the community sent letters to the governor's office and the Federal Emergency Management Agency requesting assistance. Williams says they need to stop the soil hemorrhaging as quickly as possible, and the city is in dire need of funds and supplies to do so.
So if they could dump rock along this bank, it would help mitigate some of this being eroded right now.
Williams says that would help stem the tide until the river freezes in just a few months, but that a permanent solution, like a seawall or a levee system, needs to be installed. The community hasn't heard back from the governor or FEMA, so the people will just wait and hope the river stays fed and doesn't come for much more. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan is welcoming a plan released last night for a gas pipeline from TransCanada and the three would-be producers. But as APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the pipeline could cost $65 billion and a construction date is still unknown.
The proposal is massive. 15,000 jobs, 1.7 million tons of steel, and a liquefaction plant covering 500 acres. TransCanada, along with ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and BP Alaska, coordinated on the effort. It details which company will take the lead on certain aspects of harvesting and transporting natural gas in the state. Commissioner Sullivan says getting the companies together this far along is a win.
If you look at the history in Alaska, it's kind of bedeviled our previous attempts, where whether the market doesn't align or the state's efforts and the producers aren't aligned.
By the looks, the state and producers are aligned at this early stage. The plan offers broad, if vague, details on how much a pipeline would cost. The companies estimate the entire project will cost between $45 and $65 billion. That's quite a swing, and at the upper end, a price point that's significantly higher than TransCanada's estimate 3 years ago. Commissioner Sullivan says sticker shock should not stop movement.
Costs and pricing are very, very important, but there are other comparative advantages that Alaska brings to the global LNG world that a lot of potential buyers are looking for. Reliability, huge, well-known resource base, proximity.
The companies illustrate that a pipeline would be for export, and it would end somewhere at a liquefaction plant at Tidewater. But that's as far as specifics go for geography. It could be anywhere in South Central Alaska. A pipeline could be 4 feet across, the same width as the Trans-Alaska pipeline. And the companies hope to pump more than 3 billion cubic feet of gas per day. If all the engineering, environmental planning, and permitting go as planned, construction could begin at the earliest in 8 years. Many Alaskans would like to see ground broken sooner than that, especially if the reported 15,000 jobs is an accurate figure. Sullivan says the state has ways to press the companies to move faster,
including trying to incentivize them. So there's a provision in the Point Thompson legal settlement that provides an incentive for the companies to make a final investment decision by mid-year 2016.
That means a decision as to whether to actually move ahead with the project is still more than 3 years away. In the meantime, the companies will decide whether the price of gas is enticing enough to foot the bill. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Links to plan documents are at our website, alaskapublic.org. For the past month, Shell has been drilling top holes in the Chukchi Sea. Now they're doing preparatory work in the Beaufort also. The drill rig Kulik went into action yesterday afternoon and will spend the rest of the month developing two 1,500-foot casings in the Beaufort. Shell plans to extend those top holes down into hydrocarbon layers next summer. Shell has only until the end of October to do its preparatory work in the Arctic. While Shell had hoped to complete several exploratory wells this year, the company experienced a series of setbacks, including permitting problems, construction delays, and aggressive sea ice. In the Beaufort, Shell also had to wait on the subsistence whaling season to wrap up. Koktovik's whale hunt ended just this week. When a plane load of soldiers arrives tonight, it will mean more than half of the Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson soldiers deployed to Afghanistan nearly a year ago are home. The soldiers assigned to the 4th Airborne Brigade Combat Team 25th Infantry Division have been returning to Anchorage in waves over the last week. Nearly 3,500 soldiers have been serving in the eastern provinces of Afghanistan. This evening's flight will bring home about 400 soldiers, bringing the total back in Alaska to 1,800. The remaining 1,700 soldiers will be returning over the next 10 days. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the struggle to get help with addiction.
There's sort of a phase. Oh my gosh, I've got to get myself together. And that's when folks want to go to detox. And when it isn't available, then they're back on the street.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyalaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. According to the Alaska Energy Authority and its partners, an average of $5.7 billion is spent annually on energy in Alaska. October is Energy Awareness Month, and for tips on how to save, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
Alaska's chronic shortage of alcohol and drug detox services recently got worse when one of only four residential detox centers in the state temporarily closed. A State Board of Nursing clarification about staffing requirements forced the Ernie Turner Center in Anchorage to close its program in late July. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
A recent state audit showed the Ernie Turner Center's detox program met state behavioral health section requirements, but didn't comply with the 2009 advisory from the State Board of Nursing clarifying what services LPNs, or licensed practical nurses, can provide. Alaska Board of Nursing Executive Administrator Nancy Sanders says it's been common for LPNs at detox facilities to provide certain services under the supervision of medical providers with more advanced training. Rebecca Ling is Director of Recovery Services for Cook Inlet Tribal Council, which runs the Ernie Turner Center. She says the center had LPNs working under the supervision of registered nurses and physician's assistants who were on site several hours daily and on call 24 hours a day. She says it worked well.
We've had no incidents. We've been open for over nine years. So I feel like we're very safe. There's a lot of oversight from the PA and the RN.
That medical supervision is important because, as Aquila House CEO Rosalie Nado explains, withdrawal can lead to seizures and worse for heavy users. Aquila House runs several substance abuse prevention and treatment programs.
Some of them can walk around and not even seem drunk to you, and yet if you did a blood alcohol, it is so high, it's unbelievable, and if the alcohol is taken away from them, they're going to die without medical assistance. And so it is that group of people that we never get into treatment because detox isn't available.
Sanders says upon reviewing practices at the State Department of Corrections, the Alaska Board of Nursing issued an advisory in 2009 saying it's beyond the scope of practice for LPNs to fill out an intake assessment form, something they had been doing at the Ernie Turner Center, but that would now have to be done by RNs or other providers. Sanders says LPN licenses are at risk.
They could be disciplined, found to be practicing unprofessional practice and get a fine and a reprimand, that kind of thing.
Ling says Cook Inlet Tribal Council was not told to suspend detox operations, but did so to protect the licenses of their LPNs. That takes the center's 12 beds for detox patients out of operation. It leaves three detox centers running in Alaska with a capacity to serve 26 people at a time. Nado says the resulting lengthy wait times effectively bar some users from treatment.
It has a severe impact on the community. Because what happens is there's sort of a phase. Oh, my gosh, I've got to get myself together. And that's when folks want to go to detox. And when it isn't available, then they're back on the street. And it may be months or never that they hit that point again.
Ling says Cook Inlet Tribal Council has asked the nursing board for a clarification on the issue, but meanwhile is taking steps to replace the LPNs and reopen its detox program.
We're actually moving forward, and we've posted RN positions, and we're recruiting now so that we can open as quickly as we can.
The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development shows the statewide average wage for LPNs is about $50,000 a year and $82,000 for RNs. Ling says replacing LPNs with RNs will cost the Ernie Turner Center about $410,000 a year, money it's working with the state to find. The nursing board will consider the staffing issue at its meeting October 24th through the 26th in Fairbanks. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The man that was shot dead by Bethel police officers Tuesday night has been identified as Sam Alexi Jr., age 24. He was allegedly pointing a rifle at officers before they shot him. In a new written statement released today, Bethel police say they had received a call about a disturbance Tuesday night at about 11:30 p.m. They responded to the home, and as they arrived, witnesses told them that Alexi was inside with a gun and people were in the house with him. Officers were able to evacuate two people from the home, but as they were helping them out onto the porch steps, they were confronted by Alexei, who was holding a rifle. Officers yelled at him to drop the gun, but instead he pointed it at them. One of the officers fired one round at Alexei, who was pronounced dead at the scene. Alaska State Troopers and the Alaska Bureau of Investigation are assisting the police department in the investigation. Alaskans with direct deposit woke up 878 permanent fund dividend dollars richer this morning. Paper checks were also mailed out today. This year's dividend is the lowest since 2005, but travel columnist and Alaska Travelgram publisher Scott McMurrin says the PFD always inspires airfare deals, and Alaska Airlines offers sales from all of their jet destinations in Alaska.
So they have permanent fund deals from Dutch Harbor, from Adak, from Bethel, from Barrow, from Nome, from Kotzebue. Now, they don't include Prudhoe Bay. That's a specialty market. But Gustavus and Wrangell and Ketchikan, all these places have sale pricing to almost all of Alaska's destinations, which, by the way, have expanded since last year. I mean, you've got new places like Fort Lauderdale, like Atlanta, like San Antonio, Texas, like Maui, like Kona. I mean, they're going to have, starting in November, weekly service Anchorage, Kona, nonstop.
Does the PFD sale, you had mentioned earlier that it became just a fare sale after a while. How does that impact other carriers that come into Alaska? Is it mainly Alaska Airlines that offers this, or do all the carriers kind of get involved in PFD time?
Well, all the carriers get involved in being competitive. Okay, so if they see Alaska Airlines file a fare, then a lot of times automatic programming goes in there to match it. Now, I haven't checked on this one to see whether United has matched it to Seattle, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But, you know, no other airline is offering as broad, you know, a mix as Alaska Airlines, plain and simple.
I've seen write-ups in the past about Anchorage and Alaska being one of the most expensive places to fly to and from in the U.S. Why is that, Scott? Demystify it for us and let us know. Is it fuel or what's going on with why it's so high to travel to Alaska?
Well, you know, you see a lot of people try and do an analysis about what it costs overall or what the overall trend is. And the fact is, you really got to look at a specific market. When I moved up here in 1978, to fly from Anchorage to New York City was $750 in 1978 dollars, and you had to fly on two different airlines. Right now, I can fly from Anchorage to Boston for $481 round trip. Yes, that's cheaper than Seattle, okay? But, and as I indicated earlier, Anchorage to L.A., right now, you can fly from Anchorage to L.A. right now for $400 round trip. So it depends on the market. I mean, conversely, to fly to Dutch Harbor or to Adak or to Cold Bay from here, it's $1,000. Anchorage is not outrageously expensive to fly to. Fairbanks and Barrow and Kotzebue are really, really, really expensive.
What is it about Seattle that it's such an expensive place? So you can fly to Boston twice as far, at least, as flying from Anchorage to Seattle. Why is Seattle such an expensive market?
Because Seattle is a fortress hub for Alaska Airlines. If there was more competition on the route, or if there was the right kind of competition, say from a low-cost carrier, if Southwest Airlines, for example, was flying Anchorage to Seattle, it'd be $5. Okay, but it's not. And United is not in the mood for a pricing war with Alaska Airlines, and so the dollar amount just kind of floats up until people say, "Uncle, enough!" And right now, with their PFD sale at $438, it's just below that threshold of pain.
So sometimes it just comes down to a family feud, sort of thing.
Spite and malice. And I wish it could be, you know, more advanced than that. But really, when the airlines are mad at one another, the consumer wins.
Scott McMurrin is a travel columnist and publisher of the weekly Alaska Travelgram. Nearly 647,000 Alaskans qualified for a PFD this year.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Era Alaska. For more than 30 years, Era Alaska has been transporting packages across the state, business documents, medical supplies, even family pets. More details at flyera.com or talk to your local Era Alaska agent. Era Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. Every day, over 4,000 infants and toddlers go to sleep in child care programs across Alaska in unsafe cribs. The Alaska Community Foundation is partnering with THREAD to replace unsafe cribs in licensed child care programs across Alaska with new safe cribs. To help, donate today, and the Alaska Community Foundation will provide a one-to-one match of your donation. To donate, visit alaskacf.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Community Foundation.
The state is auctioning off a large parcel of agricultural land near Anderson. The month-long sealed bid auction is for 637 acres. It's the third sale in the state's COBE-designated agricultural use area. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The auction parcel is 637 acres in size. It's near mile 275 off the park's highway. The minimum bid is the appraised value, $57,500, but the acreage will likely bring more money. Dan Prue, a land sales specialist with the State Department of Natural Resources, says two other ag land offerings in the same area this summer drew heavy interest.
We had overwhelming response to the previous sale. For just the two parcels, we had over 36 bids from across Alaska and from outside.
The Anderson area state ag parcels were nominated for sale by the public. Bruce says the first two were appraised in the mid-30s but sold for about $20,000 more. He says the higher minimum bid on the property currently being auctioned may reduce the number of bids, but he says it's better quality land.
There are some wetlands on this particular parcel, but overall the quality of soils is just a little bit better. There's a little less gravel and has road access directly to the parcel.
Prue says Anderson area agriculture includes hay and straw cultivation, grazing, and growing cold hardy vegetables. He says the low-cost cropland has appeal with farmers.
Alaskans like this type of land. It's in a borough. It's in the Denali borough, but they don't charge any property taxes, which is an asset. And the people I get from outside bid on it because the Alaska Land Program, agricultural land program, is the only one that allows non-residents to bid in the first round. And the price per acre and the cost, that they cannot buy land in Texas and Nebraska and Oklahoma for what we're selling it up here.
Prue says the state also offers an attractive financing option.
It's basically 3% above prime with a 9% limit, and you get 20 years. They don't do credit reports as far as I know and, do all that kind of financing. You just sign the contract and send it back. It's a pretty sweet deal.
Prue cautions there's a lot more costs involved in developing and farming in Alaska. The state requires the winning bidder for the current parcel to clear and till 60 acres. Use is restricted to agriculture, and the owner has to file and adhere to a state-approved farm conservation plan. The online or mail-in agricultural land parcel auction closes October 26th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Mayor Dan Sullivan put two budgets before the Anchorage Assembly this week. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Mayor Dan Sullivan's two proposals both aim to eliminate a $30 million budget shortfall. Sullivan.
We asked every department to look at how they could come up with their part of the savings. When you have a $30 million deficit, every department has to participate.
And Sullivan says it's not pretty. Proposed budget A would cut nearly $6 million from the 2012 budget, resulting in the layoff of 10 planning and finance department employees, 29 police officers, and 11 firefighters. Plus, it eliminates 82 unfilled positions. In addition, it would close three fire stations and get rid of a fire truck. Bus service would be eliminated on Sundays, and park maintenance, recreation services, and street maintenance would be reduced, along with library hours. Even the mayor says those cuts would be bad.
We think that The proposed cuts are at a level where we would see a reduction in service beyond a level that we would like to see.
So the mayor's office came up with a plan B, which juggles some newly available money around to prevent most of the cuts. The money comes from tax revenue no longer available to the school district.
In order to fund the B budget and restore positions, restore services, we would have to access part of the taxing revenues that have traditionally gone to the Anchorage School District. Last legislative session, the legislature capped the amount of money that the school district can collect in property taxes, and they're making up the difference from state funds. That leaves those funds available for general government if the assembly decides to access those funds.
That property tax revenue is estimated at $14 million. Sullivan's B budget proposes using about 12 of it. Municipal officials say Budget B would raise property taxes for homeowners by 1%. So on a $300,000 home, the property tax would increase by about $40 in Plan B. The mayor says the budget shortfall originated from labor contract expenses. Plan B would maintain more services, says Mike Stumbaugh with the Anchorage Firefighters Union. But to say it keeps them at 2012 levels, as Sullivan did in a press conference Wednesday, would be a stretch.
I believe the mayor misspoke a little bit, or he forgot about the fire department when he said that. Because when you're closing a fire an entire fire station, I'm not sure how you could say that services in that area especially aren't reduced.
Stumbaugh says he's most concerned about the elimination of several stations and a truck in Eagle River. Those cuts, Stumbaugh says, could cause problems with response times.
You would lose at least three personnel and the aerial apparatus for the buildings. I mean, Eagle River is booming, so for them to close that and say that services aren't reduced, the nearest station would be Muldoon.
Derek Scher with the Anchorage Police Union had similar concerns. He says Budget B is better, but it still leaves the APD shorthanded.
The B budget doesn't call for the layoff of any officers, but we would lose the 20 unfilled positions.
The total municipal budget is more than $448 million. The Assembly must approve it. There'll be an Assembly work session on the budget in mid-October. Assembly Chair Ernie Hall says it's likely that proposed Budget B will be passed by the Assembly with minor changes. Both Stumbaugh and Scher say they hope those minor changes will include budget increases for the fire and police departments. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mark Earhart in Akiak, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Jacqueline Estes and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. A fall can cause traumatic brain injury and require follow-up care outside of your home community. To help prevent falls, eat foods that are rich in calcium and vitamin D, like fish head soup and kelp with herring eggs. Be active, walk often, participate in subsistence activities, and have your vision checked at least once a year. More information at anthc.org. This message sponsored by the ANTHC Injury Prevention Program.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.